I did an interview or a short newsletter with Tom Davis up in Capitola. I'll give you the address if you want it. I mentioned it before. It's an interview about the murder of John Lennon. Right, Aries Research, Box 1107, Aptos, California, 95003. And you send a dollar. If you don't get the address, this is too fast, you can write to me and I'll send it to you. And send him a dollar and he'll send you a five-page interview that we did on the John Lennon assassination. And in that interview, I talked about the special forces of the Nguyen Bank, the Kill Money, their offices in Hawaii, their branches in Hawaii, the black money, and a travel agency they had, and the way Mark David Chapman traveled around the country and around the world. Wherever he wanted to go, he went back and forth easily. And one of the things I put into this interview was that Chapman's wife worked for a travel agency, and she was the person, this mysterious woman, and her in-laws, who also bought him his arts at art galleries, who arranged his itinerary. The source of the money for his fare, his hotel, food, concerts, has never been identified, although Pacific Holding Limited, a tourism company that was formed by the CIA and the special forces, may be implicated. There is a Pacific Holding Limited set up by the CIA, the Green Berets, the assassination group in Hawaii, and I wrote for this interview, both groups had funds to hire assassination teams. And when I read the background of Mr. Murdoch with his funding of Mike Kerb, Ed Davis with that secret squad 19 and the assassination teams from the LAPD, and his hiring Robert Haldeman, who covered up money that was involved in worse things like the never exposed the shooting of George Wallace and the Mary Jo Kopechne murder at Chappaquiddick and the 30 deaths of primary witnesses at Watergate that went on. In reading the Murdoch article, the Los Angeles Times had said in 1974 he made the acquisition of Pacific Holding Company, Pacific Holding Corporation, publicly traded Los Angeles firm. He overcame existing management's opposition and moved in. They had no stock management, and people who worked there didn't own the stock. They were running the company strictly for their own benefit. Murdoch moved in, started buying up the stock, bought up all the stock, put the company under the umbrella of his private holding corporation. Now, is Pacific Holding Limited the same Pacific Holding Corporation that this Murdoch has? They touch bases or overlap of persons, personalities, capabilities, and experience. And it will take a little more research to find, but I said that this should be investigated, this group called the Pacific Holding Company and a tourism agency set up by the CIA and Special Forces. Remember when the Howard Hughes organization was used by Robert Mayhew to hire assassination teams, the excuse was it was a private company, totally owned stock, used aircraft, nobody could get in and investigate it. And therefore, the assassination teams of the CIA and FBI could be used by these private companies, and there's no way to get in because there's no having to account for where the money goes or who it's paid out to. And the night before John Lennon was murdered on this broadcast on the radio, I said this was December the 7th, 1980, and I repeat that I've said before that the assassination teams of the early 60s are all in place. And if not part of the murder, they're part of the cover-up. And I mentioned certain people like Ed Davis in this article on John Connolly. And Ed Davis and John Connolly are close to this Mr. Murdoch that who has been written up in the Los Angeles Times. There was another broadcast I did in 1979 on KLRB. It was an article from Pravda from the Soviet Union that was repeated in the San Francisco Chronicle. The title was Pravda Ridicules California. And the Soviet Union said, California is a textbook of moral and social bankruptcy. If you need a classic textbook example for the study of capitalism in the last third, of the 20th century, this is it. This is the moral and social bankruptcy. And then I referred to certain people working in the state that contributed to it, like Raymond Pecunier, who was formerly head of the prisons and undersheriff in San Francisco, and Charles Bates and Ed Davis, the man mentioned in the Murdoch article, and Mike Kerb, the man mentioned in the Murdoch article. He is becoming the head of the kitchen cabinet to make curb the governor and raise $1 million 3 weeks after the elections. These last elections raised $1 million for Mike Curb for an election that's going to be 2 years away. And the insanity that I talked about in 1979, that was 2 years ago. Murdoch links into Ed Davis and Mike Curb and plenty of that California corruption and insanity. There's another article in the Washington Post, that Maxine Cheshire, that I didn't get to finish last week. The wedding last Sunday of Susie Park Thompson marrying Robert Liggett. I just dashed through that last week. Liggett was under investigation by the FBI at the time of the Koreagate investigation. Susie Park Thompson was an aide to House Speaker Carl Albert. Speaker of the House, that little mousy Albert. She was his aide, and she was fixing up congressmen and senators in the back room. They had a little place where they could have their afternoon matinees behind the congressional walls. And she was fixing these various people up. Liggett, as I said before, had three wives in Virginia. He had three children and one wife in Virginia. Well, he actually had three wives, and he had another secret wife and two children in a nearby subdivision in the same county while he was making out with Susie Thompson. So that really wasn't a slip of the tongue. He had three of them going at one time. He was a great liberal Democrat from the Bay Area, and Susie was quoted in the paper by saying she was so afraid that she would hurt his career that when in 1976, when he ran for re-election, he almost lost the election. This was the time of the Koreagate scandals, the Rice scandals, the payoff of members of Congress, bringing in Reverend Moon, the Korean influence in our own domestic affairs. And he ran for Congress in 1976 and won from the congressional district up in Northern California. But then he stepped down from there and became head of some suspicious CIA firms in Washington, D.C., and I mentioned the Oceanic Institute in Hawaii, which is described in the Washington Post as a research arm of the oceanographic firm called Oceanic Foundation. So the Oceanic Institute exists, and then there's the Oceanic Foundation that he's the head of, and the institute is described as a private business. You better believe it's a private business, and it does a research in conjunction with the foundation, the Oceanic Foundation. Well, is this Oceanic Foundation linked to Edwin Wilson and the admirals from the Nguyen Bank in Australia that put a branch in Hawaii for CIA Green Berets political assassinations, where Mark David Chapman was to go after Georgia? He lived in Atlanta, Georgia, DeKalb County. That's the man that killed John Lennon, went to Beirut, Lebanon, Fort Chaffee, Arkansas with the Laotian tribesmen of the CIA, then to Hawaii. And there his wife ran this travel agency. And I mentioned in 1980, January 80, a year and a half ago, the Oceanic Corporation run by the CIA, an international organization, up to 1977, and Liggett was working for the Oceanic Group. The Oceanic Service Corporation during World War II was a Nazi group written up in a book, Sabotage, Secret War Against America. Oceanic was a group of Nazis that had allegiance to Adolf Hitler and worked sabotaging the United States. There's Oceana, George Orwell's Oceana. There's Oceanic Corporation, and I'm just wondering, these mysterious Oceanic Foundation, the Oceanic Institute in Hawaii, with Liggett's links to the CIA, the Korean CIA, and the entire links then to the Watergate Combine, was he working and setting up or linked to those travel agencies that hired Mark David Chapman's wife and arranged the itinerary of this fella to go around until he finally met John Lennon in New York City in 1980, December the 8th, and gunned Lennon down. To update you on the Italian scandal, there are a few items in the news this week. Italy closes down its stock market as the prices collapse. They had the worst financial crisis in 64 years. This is what happened when Allende was elected into office in Chile. The American stock market, the American investors pulled their money out to cause a destabilization and would blame Salvador Allende for it so that even the liberals and the moderates would turn against him. This government was kicked out because of the scandals in Milan and Rome and all over Italy, that secret government that wants a fascist Adolf Hitler take over the Italian government. So when they got a compromise government into power this week, the Italian stock market collapsed. Also, the daughter of Licio Gelli was arrested in Rome, the 25-year-old daughter of the Grand Master of the Secret Lodge. She's been charged with espionage and criminal association. After 3 days of questioning, she went from France to the airport in Rome. She was a bag woman for her daddy and had hidden in false compartments papers linked to the P2 scandal, the secret Masonic scandal. Her father's wanted for espionage, political conspiracy, criminal association, and fraud. And he also is linked to the fake kidnapping of financier Michael Sindona and the massive tax evasion, bribery, and the collapse of the banks in Italy and the money being sent out of Italy. The daughter has been arrested, so whatever papers they found in the false compartment of her suitcase, they have more fuel to go on. I'm surprised that she'd go back with them. Also this week, Italy's military chief quits in the P2 scandal. Now, some of the defense people have resigned temporarily. Their security clearances are taken away. And one of the admirals that worked with General Haig, of course, in the NATO, the Armed Forces Chief of Staff, Admiral Torsi, resigned because of the Masonic scandal, and he's out. The newspaper said an alleged CIA report about the international plot and the records of their bank accounts in Switzerland were among some of the documents seized from the daughter of Gelli at the airport. So these were CIA reports about the international plot that she was caught with at the airport and bank accounts in Switzerland that they'll have to go into furthermore. And the head of the armed forces, the chief of staff, has resigned. On the heels of that, there was an article in the New York Times, United States and Italy break up the operation bringing heroin into this country. The United States and the Italian authorities have broken up what they call major organization for using Italy for smuggling Southwest Asian heroin into the United States. You better believe that when Licio Gelli fled the country and Sedona's in jail and the Pope was shot and all the links, the international narcotics gang are linked to the Nazis. Licio Gelli, remember, worked for Adolf Hitler, Mussolini, Franco, and then went down with Perón in Argentina and then came back to Italy and brought this disgraceful scandal down on Italy, this crisis. All of a sudden, we learned that the narcotics market has stopped. It'll stop for a while because everybody is watching and the bag people are in hiding, and so it goes. If the discussion of the CIA and the documents and the plan to overthrow Italy are a surprise to you, I was writing about those invisible governments when Watergate came in 1972, August 1972, that there was a hidden government in this country, specifically the Adolf Hitler agents from World War II, Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, working with Adolf Hitler's people to subterfuge the United States, to take over the Republican Democratic Party and put that third party, the Nazi Party, into power, which is Haig and Kissinger and Bush of the CIA and the people that are moving their way up to this total war against Russia at the present time. I pulled out an article I wrote for a local newspaper called The Nose. It was put out by Roger and Joan Lorenz here on the Monterey Peninsula during the whole anti-war movement. And I just ran across it today. It happened to be among some articles I was going through. And I wrote this in November 1973. I'm not going to read all of it to you, but it was about Gerald Ford, who had just been appointed vice president of Richard Nixon. And the paper, May Brussels, says, Gerald Ford, super spy, with a question mark. And this is what I wrote in 1973. One of the most difficult tasks facing both major political parties is the complex problem of separating Republicans and Democrats from the infiltrated espionage agents. A third party, the military intelligence agencies, have concentrated their power since World War II in hopes in the United States of a permanent fascist state. Richard Nixon, selected agent of the secret government, has now appointed more espionage agents to manage the White House, and that included Haig and Ford, the White House plumbers, the secret Army intelligence squads, and there are more now after the Watergate affair than ever before. And I'll read more of this on the air to you later, but in 1973, I was describing in a local newspaper a situation which has been in the front pages exactly as the Italian government spy scandal broke. See, we had a chance, and I've said this before, to eke these people out, to get rid of 250, 260 of them at the time of Watergate, and we didn't take it. So maybe it's too late. I don't know. Maybe we've blown the chance to stop them, or maybe we haven't. Maybe all the articles coming now are because the people in Washington and journalists around the world are recognizing that we stalled too long getting these people out. Licio Gelli in Italy was working since World War II to take over the government. But when too much money was gone and drained out and too many scandals, then they were forced to do something. And the straw that broke the camel's back, of course, was the shooting of the Pope by this group. And I want to go into that a little bit more with a few articles if I have time. One thing I do want to mention, and I didn't get a chance last week, May 24th of this year, David Copeland passed away. He was the person who used the nom de plume of William Torbett, researchers who have done work into the general umbrella story of the assassinations, have a book called Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal. It's a private manuscript that he got out working in Texas as an attorney with people from the intelligence agency and people working in the Lyndon Johnson area, and he knew the Southwest. He passed away just this last May, and he was a close friend of Penn Jones, and they brought me the manuscript in 1970, in December 1970. You can order that Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal, the same address I gave up in Capitol of Aries Arts. It's $15. It's an unpublished manuscript, and Tom Davis carries it if you don't have that book. There was an article in the Washington Post last week, a UPI story about Alexander Haig and the press, and it's just a short, I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but in there was a quip, and it says, at a recent Washington party, Carl Bernstein, the former Washington Post reporter who played a major role in uncovering the Watergate scandal, shook hands with Alexander Haig and congratulated him on his selection to the State Department post. After Bernstein left, Haig turned to another person in the room and said, how can he do that? If half the things he had written about me were true, I'd be in the slammer, in the slammer. Now, the point is that what they wrote about Haig was true, but they didn't keep it going, and Haig was left looking respectable instead of the crook that he is. But now it's 1981, and this article goes on to say that Haig looks like Nathan Detroit, the gambler in Guys and Dolls, in his black and white chalk stripe suit. So they're comparing him to Nathan Detroit in the Washington Post and the UPI, so that's not so bad. Another article, Pablo Letelier, 20 years old, will join the fight. I mentioned last week at length the murder of Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. on Embassy Row. His 21-year-old son is going to Georgetown University. He understands the political significance of his father's murder. This is in the Washington Post. And he appreciates the most notorious crime of international terrorism committed in Washington. I mention it because I'm really happy, I'm sad, but I'm happy to realize that some person is alive enough to care about his father's murder. He says he's going to study political science, he's going to study economics and politics and get a master's degree at a Mexican university and use his academic work and go down to Chile someday and undo some of the things that happened because his father was murdered and Allende was murdered. I've yet to hear one of the Kennedy children or Ted Kennedy or Robert Kennedy's children, or John Kennedy Jr., any of the Kennedy family or Martin Luther King's family to come up and even talk about understanding the political implications and the international implications and that they want to join a fight to undo what was done and, to get the truth straight about their murdered parent. It's nice that Pablo Letelier has that interest, and he says every time he drives down the road there, the Embassy Row, he thinks about how his father was gunned down And he was 8 years old when they left Chile, and he was going to school in Washington at the time. Another article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Boston Globe, this last week on the Kennedy assassination. Why did the Navy conduct the autopsy? Now, I'll do more on this at length later, but can you imagine 17 years later, almost 18 years of research that we researchers have done? We're called paranoid, we're called theorists, research theorists, and now the Boston Globe is running articles, 10 or 12 points, on the wounds of Kennedy that the Warren Commission failed to examine the clothing of the bullet wounds, they failed to consult the doctors in Texas, that the military physicians had never done autopsies before on with wounds by guns, that one man who had conducted the autopsies came in late to the hearing, a half hour late. They failed to dissect the tract of the wound of the bullet in the president's body. They incorrectly located the wound in the back of the head and the base of the neck by 4 inches. They failed to describe the wounds in the reference to Kennedy's body. They didn't use photographic evidence at the time of the autopsy and so forth. In the Warren Commission, it goes on to say, went on to say one bullet went through John Connally and John Kennedy. And this is a long article from the Boston Globe, June 28, 1981, on things that I've talked about the 10 years that I've been on the air. What they don't say in the article is Arlen Specter, the man who made up and fabricated and lied for the CIA on the one bullet theory, is now a senator in the United States Senate. He is one of the senators from Philadelphia, from Pennsylvania. He was a DA in Philadelphia. He was the Senate of the United States, where the murderers and the cover-up of the murderers continue to get into power. I got another article from the Philadelphia Inquirer about John Hinckley Jr., the man. Remember his name? He's the man who shot 4 people in front of the old Hilton Corral March 30th this last year. Hinckley is the best-kept secret in town. That's what this article is about, in Butner, North Carolina. That if people talk at the Federal Correctional Institute about him, they've been threatened to be fired. There's threats if they say a thing about him, that he's kept behind areas that nobody sees him. He was flown in on a military helicopter. They never see the man, and he's kept isolated from every single person. There's elaborate security, and Hinckley just is kept in a room. Now, they have this fancy team that meet him psychiatrically and try to pick and wash out those brain cells that remember who we saw in California, the Nazis saw in Illinois, the Nazis in St. Louis, the Nazis in North Carolina, who he stayed with in Washington, D.C., who took his picture in front of the White House, who paid for the Sheraton Hotel, who paid for his bus fare, who he sat with, where he was in California. All that will be out. They're going to keep him from March 30th until August, totally isolated, and then prove he's mentally deranged because he's isolated. What did he do before? He met people, he stayed at hotels, he stayed at a hotel where the Secret Service were, directly across from the Secret Service. He gunned people down. He may have had assistance. He may not have been the only person. But this article tells about the threats on people to even say anything about John Hinckley. He's something special, and you better believe it, because I think John Hinckley Sr. is linked to the highest levels of intelligence, and I've said before on the radio, and I'll say it again, I think George Bush, John Connally, and Alexander Haig should be removed from office, just like the Italian people were out, until the links of the Hinckley family to AID, to Cambodia, to Nigeria, to Guatemala, the CIA, the church fronts, till all that is open. These people shouldn't be making decisions. They shouldn't be sending weapons to torture other people. They shouldn't be killing people. They are the madmen from Auschwitz that have the power from the Nazi regime that formed the CIA, and they shouldn't have that power. This article goes on to say a federal grand jury is meeting in Washington to decide whether to indict Hinckley. And then it says others wounded in the March 30th shooting, aside from Reagan, were Secret Service agent Timothy McCarthy. You've seen a picture of McCarthy back at work, so he's obviously not injured. And it mentions Press Secretary James Brady and Delahanty. We don't see much of Delahanty. He was wined and dined, or was offered that trip to Mexico by Clement Stone, with his interlocking links to John Connally and the Texas oil people and the assassination team. This article, Washington Post last week, Brady, after 3 months injury, is making extraordinary progress. And it goes how well he is. He's got intellect. He's intelligent. He's got memory. He's got wit. He's got humor. He's got personality. Oh, Brady must be a barrel of fun. Can't you just see? You haven't seen him or heard him, have you yet? And this entire article, Washington Post, July 1st, doesn't even mention John Hinckley Jr. Usually, when they talk about somebody recovering from this kind of injury where half his brain is gone, they talk about the assailant. Hinckley hasn't even been charged with shooting Brady, but Brady, right across the front, 3 months after injury, is making extraordinary progress. He is doing so well, there won't be any reason to indict Hinckley, I should hardly think. As I say, they're having a barrel of fun back there in Washington. Herb Cain had an article about Chappaquiddick this week. This is the anniversary, July 19th, on Chappaquiddick. He took a vacation and went up there to Martha's Vineyard, and he said the talk around town is the three-persons theory, that Mary Jo Kopechne was in back of the car, and a person was in front, and Ted Kennedy had a girly party, and the car went over, and they didn't know Mary Jo was there, and that's the talk in town. It wasn't so simplistic, but the point is they're still talking about it. And on the anniversary of Chappaquiddick, maybe we should go back to the White House tapes of March 13th, 1973, where Richard Nixon is talking to John Dean about Herbert Kalmbach's bank records and how he funds Jack Caulfield and Tony Lasiewicz, who was up at Chappaquiddick, and the trouble that they were going to give Ted Kennedy. And John Dean is talking about Chappaquiddick. Here comes Chappaquiddick with a vengeance. And the president says, in other words, we, and Dean says, he is ready to disprove and show that, and they're not telling you much. And then John Dean says, if they get to it, they're going to come out and this whole thing can turn around. If Kennedy knew the bear trap that he was walking in. Now this is Haldeman and Kalmbach and John Dean, all these great authors selling their books, and Haldeman, vice president of Murdoch Company down in Los Angeles, a $500 million enterprise totally owned. And the White House tapes going back to Chappaquiddick, the anniversary this year, they're talking about the money of Herbert Kalmbach. He gave Tony Lasiewicz about $100,000 a month before Chappaquiddick. And the president is saying, how will Kalmbach explain that he hired this guy to do the job on Chappaquiddick? But that was the bear trap that Ted Kennedy fell in, whatever it was, and I think I know what it is, and we'll do more on it in the weeks to come. But I have 30 or 40 news stories here to update you. There obviously isn't going to be time in 1 minute. This is the way the news is flowing. I've got things on Melvin Belli's suit against Charles Higham, on the Sirhan case, on the Lennon shooting, and more. The Goering art treasures that are being found, the Turpil Korkola stories. We can't do it all, of course, but I just want you to know that as the world turns, pieces of new information are coming. People are working and putting things together. On the one side, it looks dismal. On the other side, I'm the eternal optimist. Penn Jones in Texas, the great researcher and author, he calls me the eternal optimist. And I feel that these people have maybe gone too far or on the brink. And as we lose our allies to this insanity, we'll be forced to come to some policy that has been reasonable, or else lose our own friends and lose our country. In the meantime, I'll get back. I'll be studying the news of the next week and get back to some of these stories in detail with you later. Take care of yourselves and read the paper, and we'll be back next week. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Bressel. This program originates from Carmel, California.